I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for a visit with Greg Phillips. He's based on the island of Nevis, and he shares the diverse cultural, culinary, and historical immersive experiences in a captivating mock trial of Alexander Hamilton and British Admiral Horatio Nelson. Come along and join me for an in-depth conversation about the people, places, and cuisine and culture of the island of Nevis with Phillips, a member of the Nevis Historical and Conservation Board and former CEO of Nevis Tourism. I'm Tom Wilmer. We're talking to Greg Phillips on the island of Nevis in the Caribbean. Hi, Greg.
Hello, Tom. How are you doing?
So, a friend of mine told me that you own a company there called Nevis Sun Tours.
Yes, your friend is correct.
That's really cool. Tell me a little bit about your background. You know, how far back does your family go on Nevis? You were born and raised there.
Yes, I was born here. So, my family goes back as far as all of us can remember. So Nevis, you can say, is definitely in my blood.
Well, it's interesting. You know, here you are on Nevis, an island in the middle of the Caribbean, 3,000 miles away from me. Different world.
Yes, I would imagine so.
One of the things that I find most fascinating, you were one of the heads of tourism, right, of the island of Nevis.
I was from 2013 to 2019. Yeah, so many of the people I know in travel, I would have known them since that time or probably a bit earlier, because I was definitely involved in tourism before I was actually officially employed at the Nevis Tourism Authority as the CEO.
So that helped you. It built up some momentum for contacts and connections and whatnot, right?
Yes, for sure. And that's one of the things that I think once you're in travel and tourism in the Caribbean, that's definitely one of the important things. It's really a community. And being a part of the Caribbean community, and once you're trying to promote your island, you will interact with lots of people from other islands. But, of course, since we're on an island, what's really, really important for us is our interactions with people outside in the source markets that we're hoping to get travelers from. So definitely we would have great relationships. I would have great relationships with people in travel in the United States, in Canada, and also in England.
Right. And I've been there before, and St. Kitts is your gateway island. It's right next door, and that's where most of the people fly in and out of, from Miami and other gateways.
Yes. St. Kitts definitely is that. You could say the gateway for Nevis. St. Kitts is part of Nevis, and Nevis is part of St. Kitts, because together we are, in fact, one country. These islands are 2 miles apart, and in terms of personality of each island and the feel that you get from each island and how each island really presents from a travel perspective, they are hundreds of miles apart, I'll say, which is one of the very intriguing things about these two islands. And the fact is also, when you travel to St. Kitts and Nevis, once you're here, you could check something special off your list, which is the fact that you have visited the smallest country in the Western Hemisphere, which is what we are based on our population size and perhaps land mass also.
Oh, interesting. So going back in time, both St. Kitts and Nevis were part of the British colonial empire. And as I recall, in more recent years, it was referred to as the overseas protected territories, right? But since the 1980s, you have gained your total independence, correct?
Yes, indeed, you're correct. We were, in fact, part of the British Empire, and since 1983, September 19th, as a matter of fact, 1983, we gained our independence from England, and since then, we've been an independent country with just our two islands, Saint-Kitts and Nevis.
It's so fascinating. You have such a convoluted history, and for such a small island, I mean, for example, Alexander Hamilton, a seminal person in the American Revolution in the early days of America, and then you had Lord Nelson from the British Admiralty. There were two key players that have a direct connection with Nevis, and you have spent a lot of time studying them, and I understand that you created a play that tourists can go to that deals with the trial of Alexander Hamilton and Nelson. Tell us about that. That's fascinating.
Thanks for bringing that up, because it's definitely one of the flagship activities that we provide at Nevis on Tours. The play's called The Trial of Hamilton and Nelson. And it's a theatrical production, a courtroom drama, if you will. And in this courtroom drama, Alexander Hamilton and Horatio Nelson, for the first time, on trial simultaneously. Now, the reason why this is possible is really because both of these men have Nevis in common, number one, and number two, they have some very interesting parallels in their lives. And that is the only reason why we can put them on trial to face the same challenges at the same time.
You do the trial at the local Performing Arts Center, correct?
Well, there are a couple of venues we can use. We use the local Performing Arts Center, and there's also a center in a park that we can also use. It all depends on the crowd size that we anticipate, because it's really meant to be very intimate because of the nature of what it is. Yes.
So you're bringing in tourists, some of whom would not have much of a history or knowledge of Alexander Hamilton and or Lord Nelson. How do you ramp up that information for your tourist friends to go to the trial and judge it?
Excellent. So I like that question, because it as the writer, creator, and now the producer of this play, that is exactly one of the questions I had to grapple with, recognize that it would be an issue and find a solution for it, a theatrical solution, I'll call it. And because I came to the realization, let me put it this way, I came to the realization that most Americans would not know anything about Nelson. And
right.
It's not sufficient for me to just tell them, or for us to reveal, that Lord Horatio Nelson is as famous in England as Hamilton is in America. We had to tell the story. And the way I resolved that as part of the presentation of the play was to create a character who is the director of historical prosecutions. Basically, in America, that would be the equivalent of your district attorney, state attorney. Just someone, since these two men are very famous, just someone to do a public indictment that tells the audience, and it's really the people who show up, because typically we do this before you enter the theater, as people are gathered, that the director of historical prosecutions come out and have an announcement that presents these two men, says who they are, also explain why they are charged and what the charges specifically are before they enter the court. And she's also the one, in this case it's a she, also tells them exactly what their role is before they go in the court, so that when they do enter the theater, they know that they are, in fact, in a courtroom, and their experience now begins, and they themselves have a role to play in this trial.
Well, reading in from the outside, my knowledge of Admiral Lord Horatio Nelson is that he basically pissed off the Nevisians because he captured American-built trading ships, right? So that would have been one of the biggest issues with Nelson there.
Well, we don't delve specifically into that. When I tell you what the charges are and the parallels in their lives, that will give you an insight into what we deal with. So the parallels in their life, let me start there. Both of them have Nevis in common. Alexander Hamilton was born on Nevis, but Nelson got married here on Nevis in 1787. That's about 30 years after Hamilton was born here. But what's also interesting is that these two men were born 1 year apart. Hamilton was born the year before Nelson, and they also died 1 year apart. Hamilton died one year before Nelson, and in fact, they died in very similar violent ways. Both of them were shot. So that being said, there's those sort of parallels there that they had nothing to do about, to do with.
Right.
But then their lives went on in certain specific ways that, as you examine history, you recognize, well, these men were so similar, they were involved in so many similar things that the story itself, it can be told with a courtroom drama through bringing these charges against them. Now, I'll tell you what the charges are, but before I say that, let me also say this, that for each of them, they never met each other. Effectively, because they are tried simultaneously, it's as if they are, in fact, co-conspirators. So that in itself is a bit of an intrigue.
What are the charges?
Yeah. So the first charge is regarding their emotional connection to the island of Nevis. Now, the other interesting thing about these charges, let me say before I go into the others, is that it's not a matter of whether or not they are guilty. History has already told us that everything they are charged with is true, that they actually did these things. The question is, who holds more responsibility? Who is more guilty? So both of them are charged with being emotionally connected to Nevis. And the argument in the court trial is really about who's more connected to Nevis. So on that first charge, they each want to be found guilty of being emotionally connected to Nevis. The second charge is for their involvement in wars for revolution and empire expansion. And that one is also clear in regards to the fact that, yes, both of them were involved in wars. Firstly, Alexander Hamilton being involved in the Revolutionary War, basically America against England. And then you had Lord Horatio Nelson. He's sailing. He's a British naval admiral. He's sailing around the world, basically fighting battles to help to expand the British Empire, fighting battles to help to protect trading routes for the British Empire. So he's out there doing everything that he can to protect the British Empire and expand it. Interestingly, and you can see a parallel, and another similarity is these guys are, in fact, at war against each other in terms of their countries. Their countries are at war against each other, even though while they are all at war, they are not in the same theater. And then the third charge is definitely the one that creates the most interest in the courtroom from my observation. And this one is for scandalous behavior and breach of marital vows. And this one is also...
And that was Lord Nelson having the affair, right?
Well, both of them. Both Hamilton and Nelson did have affairs which became rather public. So, so we deal with both of those and have them face the charge for being involved in the scandalous behavior and breach of marital vow. And especially in Nelson's case, when you understand the story of the affair that he was in. And even in Hamilton's case, so you could see clearly that these two men were definitely involved in what we have to term as scandalous behavior.
Well, one of the things, this is neither here nor there, but I've always been fascinated with Alexander Hamilton, because here was this guy that was an illegitimate child, born on Nevis in the 1750s, and how he went on to become a key player in the American Revolution and become Secretary of the Treasury. It's just incredible human story.
No, it is completely that. And even looking at this trial and what comes out in it, the arguments that are made in it, it makes it, that part of his story, all the more fascinating, because you can say as how unbelievable it might be if you were to look at someone like him who's born out of wedlock, who went through all the challenges that he did as a child. No one would say that, yes, he would grow up to have the impact that he did. And still today, and having spent so much time with Alexander Hamilton over the past few years, his story still fascinates me. But apart from the fascination, it's still amazing to me that there's so many things that he has done in his short lifetime that many people still have not recognized. And once they get into it, they'll recognize it. Now, and speaking of that, the fourth charge that both Nelson and Hamilton face in this trial is the charge which basically speaks to them and their complicity in support of the institution of slavery. And that's really the heaviest charge. One of the charges that when you consider these men, one charge that is appropriate that we cannot omit from such a trial.
Didn't Alexander Hamilton, wasn't he against slavery to a point?
Well, and that's just it. Those are the types of arguments that are made. So effectively, when one attends this trial, they're there absorbing all this in a very dramatic way, and they learn so much because of what we are able to reveal from their histories. And one of the more fascinating things as someone who, for me anyway, for the people who attend the trial, is the fact that this is not just a passive attendance. Once you're in the theater looking at this drama, this courtroom drama, you are in fact the jury. So even though I have written it and produced it, I have no clue from night to night how this play actually ends. Yeah, because the way I've designed it is basically after each charge is argued, the jury, the audience, get to vote electronically by scanning a QR, the associated QR code for each charge, and they decide who they think is more guilty. So by the end of the trial, the judge would say what the verdict is based on the actual vote that were made from the audience. So the audience is who collectively decide how the play ends. Because at the end of the play, those men must be punished. And one of the lines from the judge in the play is, where there is guilt, punishment must follow.
You've read a lot about Alexander Hamilton. You've read his writing. If you could go back in time, do you think you'd be friends with him?
Your question is whether or not I would be friends with him. That's an amazing question. I think so. And this is why I say I think so. Because I believe that he's just a complicated human being. And when I say a complicated human being, just like all of us, and he was a great achiever. And that's one of the things I love about him. He achieved despite all the challenges that he faced. And I think it's just his tenacity for doing what is right in the moment. That's why I think I would love him and be friends with him. But while I'm saying this, I think that it's important for us to understand from a historical perspective that when Alexander Hamilton was alive, he wasn't well-loved by everyone. Now everybody loves Hamilton, especially since the musical came out, 12 years ago? But at this time, not 12, 11 years ago, at this time, yes, we love him today, but we have reasons to love him because of how significant his achievements are and relevant his achievements are today. But back then, as he was making these decisions and going through these things, many people didn't love him. And it's really because also of how he was. I mean, Hamilton was just one of those guys who would tell you exactly what's on his mind.
Well, and actually, that's one of the things that wound up getting him shot in the duel with Aaron Burr, was his inability to kind of apologize or get over
it. But yeah, I mean, it was a matter of ego. But the other thing, if you ever have an opportunity to delve into the details of the weeks leading up to the duel and what happened just before the duel, it's so fascinating. And just to look at others, and when I say others, other historians and people who have really investigated these things, just the sheer disparity, I'll say, between how people think about Hamilton and the duel. Many people, there are some people who have looked at the situation and suspect that, well, they've gotten to the conclusion that that might have been a suicide. And there's also people who look at it and say that, no, Hamilton really wanted to live. He had plans for the same evening. He made plans for the same day of the duel. Because Hamilton, the reason they say that, when you look at Hamilton's life leading up to the duel, first of all, some people think that he was quite depressed because at that time his political career is waning. He's not as much in the spotlight. He's also dealing with that as an issue in terms of the politics of the time and whether or not the republic that, you know, he spent so much time setting up was actually in jeopardy with the way politics in America was going. So you look at all the preparations he did to put things in order before the duel. You look at the time he spent with his family. Some people just conclude, yeah, Hamilton was preparing to die. While Burr, on the other hand, was practicing. Burr was practicing to make sure that he is a good shot. Hamilton did not. Hamilton was not interested in shooting at Burr to kill him.
Interesting. Before we move on, let's talk a moment about Lord Horatio Nelson. And you studied a lot about him. Do you like him as a historical figure?
That's complicated. And this is why I say that. With Nelson, as an individual, has some characteristics about him that shows that he is a very, very serious guy, a serious admiral. He's a leader, a great leader, a serious leader. So those things I love about him. But in reality, there's some other things about Nelson that, you know, provide a bit of a challenge. And it's in these situations I remind myself that we must keep history in its true context. While I'm keeping history in its true context, mm-hmm. I must also embrace the feelings I have in relation to things in history and people in history. Because if I don't do that, I cheat myself out of the true effect that history should have on me. So I say that to say that in relation to Nelson is with the British Empire. He is protecting slave routes. And there's nothing that I've seen in Nelson's history that says that Nelson himself was involved in slavery, benefited and profited from slavery itself. But he is on the side of Britain that is doing all the things that are being done in the Caribbean as it relates to the enslavement of African people. And what really gets me, if we dissect slavery and look at it for exactly what it is, what it was, we must say that those were some serious, serious crimes against humanity. And since slavery were crimes against humanity, everything from kidnapping, the exploitation, the abuse, the trafficking, all those things that people would be in such serious trouble legally today. How can I wholeheartedly say that, yes, I would have been friends with someone who was involved in such things?
But again, contextually, at that time and place, there was a difference.
Yes. I am mindful of that. And I'm also mindful that in that time and place, I personally would have been someone who would have been facing some of those same struggles and issues that Nelson would have been fighting to protect. It's interesting, but it's also me being completely honest in the way we have to be when we talk about history. And that is, in fact, one of the main things that really comes out in this play, that it's presented in such a way not to shame or make anyone feel bad. It's really presented in such a way to give people an opportunity to honestly interact with history. And one thing I must say, this is not a reenactment with any impersonators. Hamilton and Nelson are dead. So they are not on stage. This is a true courtroom drama. It's in a modern day court of history. And so the people who are on stage are really their advocates, their lawyers, representing them and making sure that they get the best outcome against these charges that they face.
So your jurors in the trial, are they kind of coached to judge based on contextual time in history and not projecting current values?
Yes, and that's a very good question. They are, and that's why the role of the judge is so important, because the judge really makes those presentations and instruct them that they are to judge these men not just for who they think they are, whether they like them. It's really about the charges and listening to the arguments. And I'll tell you this, Tom, as I was writing this, one of my struggles, I had a few struggles and challenges, I'll say, as I wrote this. One was to make sure that they didn't all sound the same, the arguments and the lawyers, because of all the parallels in their lives. But in addition to that, the challenge was to make this as realistic as possible from a legal point of view. And the other challenge was to make the arguments as strong as possible, because at one point at the early stages of writing it, my thought was, well, if there's a lot of British people in the audience, they'll probably just vote for Nelson because they know Nelson and they probably love him.
Right.
And if there's lots of Americans, they love Hamilton, they'll vote for Hamilton because it may come across as USA versus England. Sounds like a World Cup match, but that's not what resulted. What resulted is that there are some serious arguments that are put forward that deal with even some issues today that we can consider modern day issues. For example, the first charge that you may think, that's a nothing charge. They're arguing about who is connected to Nevis emotionally. But that covers a lot of issues. I mean, especially today when we think about immigration and who belongs where. Those things come up, and there's a part, you remember the famous trial in America where that famous line, if the glove don't fit, you must acquit. In this play, for each charge, each lawyer, you know, they present certain lines and that they must hit in order to be convincing. And one of the great ones in that first charge is Nelson's lawyer makes the argument that birth is an accident, but love is a decision. And his point really was that Hamilton had no control over where he was born. And if that's his argument, if that's his lawyer's argument, that he should be connected to Nevis simply because he was born here, that must go out of the window because birth is an accident. But Nelson was connected to Nevis because of love. He fell in love here, and that was not an accident. That was a decision. So where do you belong? Is it the place where you happen to be born or the place where you love and where you found love? And so, you know, you look at an argument like that, and it the audience ends up with a very tough decision.
That's interesting. Well, only because of time, we have to move on. in one other subject that I want to talk a little bit with you about. You're CEO of Nevis Sun Tours, and reading your background, one of the things that you are most proud about are personalized experiences, authentic, immersive, and intimate experiences. And that kind of describes what you're trying to accomplish through your tourism. Talk to us about, because it implies that you're focused on smaller groups.
Yes, and that's important because when I've found, and there's one tour in particular that at this point you can always, once you book it, you'll always find me, and that's our Alexander Hamilton Island tour. It's our most written about tour. It's the most awarded tour. We've won international awards for that one. Last year, we won an award from Azamara Cruises for being the best new tour that they had on offer in the previous year. And we were up against a couple of European tour operators. So that one was pretty special for us. But what I found with why we're successful with every activity or tour that we have on offer from us that are proprietary tours that we develop is the fact that we in fact check those four boxes. They must be authentic. In other words, can't be done anywhere else but here in St. Kitts and Nevis. Number two, they must be intimate because we are focused on small groups. They also must be immersive. In other words, you're not just driving around and having someone point at things. You're getting out, you're exploring, you're doing things, you're tasting things, you're involved in things. You're at the play, and you're not just sitting there watching passively. You're involved. You are part of the play as the jury. And then it's also about being memorable. You will remember. And what we want you to remember is not the stories that we told. We want you to remember how you felt. How you felt when you tasted something, how you felt when you learned this, how you felt when you heard this, how you felt when it was revealed to you that Alexander Hamilton won the trial and not Nelson.
Uh-huh.
You know, those are the types of stories we want people to talk about. So that's why we check those four boxes with everything that we do.
How many people, on average, are on any one of your individual tours?
With the Alexander Hamilton Island tour, you may see us with two people because it's a couple who want to do it by themselves. You may see us with 20 people at the maximum because those people want to be together. It's either a multi-generational family that may get that big, or it's people from one company who definitely want to be together. And I say definitely want to be together because when we have groups of people who are associated, they allow themselves to be immersed. Whereas if you have a big tour with a bunch of strangers, then it's more challenging to get them immersed because everybody's having their own conversations. And as the guide, you end up talking at people rather than making real connections. And one of the things that really fascinates me with travel, whether it is that I'm traveling and being on a tour or someone is here and we're going through an activity with them, it's about the exchange. That's what travel is about. That's what makes travel special. It's the exchange. It's not just a lopsided, someone was talking at me and I was just listening. It's me being fascinated by the culture and asking questions about this. It's me learning something and having more questions and can ask those questions on the spot and get answers. And it's me also having an opportunity to share my experience with a particular something that we may be discussing.
Give us a little bit about the breadth of the tours that you do. You do culinary tours.
So we have a number of culinary tours that are proprietary to us. And the reason for that is because one thing that is very important when people travel, it is the food. The food says so much about the people and about the culture. And oftentimes now in the Caribbean, unless you're in places like Jamaica, for example, where everyone knows Jamaican food, when you get to these smaller islands, you're not going to be somewhere in the world and find a Nevis restaurant, but you'll find a Jamaican restaurant. Why is that? Is there such a thing as Nevisian cuisine, as Nevis food? And I think there is. What is interesting is that even people who live here on island today cannot and will not necessarily be able to define what that is. And the reason for that is because of all the conveniences and being in a place like St. Kitts and Nevis where standard of living has gotten high, mainly because of our education levels, etc. We're not in the struggle as some other islands are. So instead of you growing something or raising an animal and eating it, you're going to the grocery store. And it's in a can, it's packaged, or something. And the authenticity just isn't there anymore. And so we, with our food tours, that's one thing that we definitely try to maintain. It's us being the guardians of our food culture and presenting it in the way that, that it should be presented and maintained so that people can recognize, yes, there's a food identity even in a place like Nevis, even in a country like St. Kitts and Nevis. One of our most popular food tours is one called Cooking with Ras Airoi. That's where you go on a Rastafarian farm and you get to cook Rastafarian cuisine, which is going to be basically vegan cuisine, but you would have harvested some of your own ingredients and you would have cooked over an open fire in clay pots that are locally made. This is the type of pot that my grandmother taught me to cook in. You're cooking over an open fire from things that, ingredients that were likely just harvested by yourself. And what's also great is that many people, after going through this experience, they walk across the street to the pottery, where a couple of ladies, they're retirees, but they've been in this craft of making these pots all their lives. They still are there doing it. Some people walk across the street and just purchase their own pot. But that's also one of our activities where you can go there and make an item with them that you, once it's fired and ready for you to take home with you, you can take it home with you as something that, yes, you made. It's practical. You can also use it and cook in it because you just cooked across the street.
Mount Gay rum in Barbados is legendary. Have you guys developed a distilled rum industry there?
No, not on Nevis. And I'm smiling because Nevis is one of those interesting places. We're one of those islands that never had a rum. Well, never had a legal rum. Let me put it that way. I'll tell you what the legend is. And I call it a legend because I don't see anything documented in history. But some people would tell you, we do have a local rum. It's really a local moonshine. Because Britain did not want anyone on Nevis to make any rums here, to distill any rums. And they sent this man from England to basically police that and ensure that no rums were being made on the island. And the man's name was Lord Hammond. When he showed up on the island, everybody who were the rum distillers basically moved their stills into the bush so that he couldn't find them. And since then, they've called the product after him. To this day, the local moonshine is called Hammond. It's one of those things that it might be under the counter, but you can just about every place that would serve rum, you can probably ask for it and get it.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like that's an opportunity for somebody.
To do what? Bottle and sell Hammond?
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that, interestingly, Nevis isn't one of those islands. Now, there's this gentleman here now who mixes a spiced rum here on the island. It's not distilled here.
Well, an aside, I spent a lot of time on Montserrat a long time ago, and what I discovered there is the huge Irish expat history there from the people that were sent there as Irish slaves, and the same thing with St. Kitts. Did you have Irish immigrants sent to Nevis?
No, Nevis doesn't have that type of European history, I'll say, where we can say, well, it was the Irish or the Scottish here, per se. What we do know is that lots of people from Scotland would have been, you know, back in the day when people were moving to the Caribbean to try to build their fortunes, would have been given plots of land, etc., on St. Kitts. That's really why Alexander Hamilton's father was here as a Scotsman. And why he was born to here on Nevis as a result of the relationship he had with Hamilton's mother, Rachel Fawcett. So also on Nevis, the Bath Hotel, which is definitely the first hotel built anywhere in the Caribbean. It's built in the area of the hot springs that are still here on Nevis that people do enjoy. It was built there because, you know, Europeans, including Scottish people, used to come to Nevis to take the baths for the healing properties of the hot springs here. So there's that connection. It's also known that on that property, and this was built back in the 1800s, on that property there was also a small golf course, probably the first golf course in this hemisphere of the world. And who do you think were playing golf back then? It was the Scottish people.
Well, you have a pretty cool golf course there now.
It's the golf course at the Four Seasons. It's an 18-hole championship golf course, Robert Trent Jones Jr. Golf Course. So, yes.
And so that's a real popular place to stay, isn't it?
Yes, the Four Seasons. And in reality, the Four Seasons is, number one, the only branded hotel on Nevis, and it is also the largest hotel on Nevis. Now, that being said, it has only 186 rooms, but there's also lots of villas connected with it. All the other hotels on Nevis are extremely special boutique hotels, and they go all the way down to from 11 rooms all the way up to 32 rooms.
So a lot of bed and breakfast sort of stays.
Right? Well, yeah, some would be considered bed and breakfast, but some are legitimate hotels. With full service, have restaurants, etc. And that's the key thing, that, you know, your stays here on Nevis are going to be that intimate. I mean, imagine you're staying, for example, at a place like Montpellier, which has 18 rooms. And being at Montpellier or any of these other hotels, really, I mean, you're at a hotel with 18 rooms. I promise you, by the second day, they know your name. They know how you like your eggs. It makes for a very special and intimate stay. I was saying it's not that we have just a small number of hotel rooms on Nevis. By travel industry definition, let me say that. That small number of hotel rooms means a lot, because even when the island is full, it's not going to be overcrowded. It makes for very special stays. That's part of what makes Nevis special. It's the natural exclusivity that is there to be attained because of the room stock. The small room stock that we have here on the island.
So, and again, before we go, to get to Nevis, you typically fly into St. Kitts. Then would you take a boat? You'd take a boat across the way?
Yes, so most people would fly into St. Kitts direct from the United States. There's Delta out of Atlanta. There's daily service from American out of Miami. There's also American out of Charlotte. There's JetBlue. And American and Delta sometimes out of JFK, and then there's United out of Newark, flying directly into St. Kitts. After you get to St. Kitts, we have a very, very seamless, definitely the most seamless immigration system that you can go through. In no time, you're through the airport, and on your way to Nevis, you take a water taxi. And the water taxi is going to be, if it's just going the shortest distance, will be 6 minutes on the water taxi to get to Nevis. Yeah, they'll hand you a beer. Great. They'll hand you a complimentary beer or water, and I promise you, you will not finish it unless you're a competitive drinker. You will not finish it by the time you get to Nevis. It's that quick, that seamless. And there's other ways to get to Nevis. You can, if you fly private, you can fly directly into Nevis. But in addition to that, you probably know of Cape Ear, based in the northeast United States. Yeah, so they also have operations in the Caribbean, and they provide a service from both St. Thomas and also St. Croix directly into Nevis. And what's really good about it, Yeah, KPA also has the co-chair and interline agreements with all the major airlines, all the legacy airlines. So, in fact, if your connection, if it's easier for you to connect into a place like St. Thomas, you could actually book, let's say, a United ticket, JetBlue American ticket from wherever you are into St. Uh-huh. Thomas, direct into Nevis. The last leg would be performed by KPA.
That's really cool. Well, Greg, we're out of time, which means I now have to come down and see you. But before we go, give us the best contact for somebody to learn more about Nevis Sun Tours.
The best way to contact us at Nevis Sun Tours is to find our website, and that is NevisSunTours.com. That's NevisSunTours.com. NevisSunTours.com. Or you can contact us directly on reservations with an S at NevisSunTours.com. We'll be happy to reach out to you. And all the other contact information details will be right there on the website at NevisSunTours.com.
All right, Greg. Well, I'm going to let you go, but thank you so very much.
Thank you, Tom.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.